Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains August 8th through the 14th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly, where we have a contender for the worst ever use of VAR, and that is saying something. All of those wonky offside lines and physiologically unreasonable handballs were nothing compared to a match being won and lost of whether the footballers were playing nicely. The VAR at the Las Palmas Mallorca match decided to act as a hybrid of KGB and overarching early years primary school teacher and start a moral crusade. At least Marici did something. I mean, Mata was prosecuted for thought crime. Everybody, please stop overreaching with the tech. It's like smart motorways that force you to drive at 50 miles an hour on an empty road at 1 o'clock in the morning. You don't know better. We'll go into the details, but I am actually the serious point here. I'm convinced that what they've done is they've recognised how pathetically they dealt with racism in the recent past. They've been on one EDI training course, and now they think they know it all. Anyway, can somebody also explain to me what happened to Jules Koundé in the 83rd minute of Barcelona's match at Celta Vigo? 2 weeks ago, right here, we were saying how well he was playing. What happened? Did his battery run out? Was there a glitch in the Wi-Fi? We've got a league on our hands again, especially now that Real Madrid have solved all of their problems with football manager regen Raul Asensio playing centre-back. They've been linked with the French teenager Zinedine Benzema and Portugal's Cristiano Figo. Athletic won the Basque Derby. If you're an influencer desperate for some exposure, get yourself there in a blue and white top, sitting alongside your other half in red and white. You're bound to be on the screen 10 times in the course of the game. That's what we want to see at modern football, not some rude, piratical man waving his middle finger around. Speaking of glitches in the code, Getafe scored a goal from open play. Now that means that their footballers, they ran around dribbling and passing the ball to each other, and then one of them kicked it in the net. And they enjoyed it so much they did it again. Congratulations to Diego Simeone, 700th match in charge of Atletico Madrid, and to Valencia, the most important story of the weekend, of course, back in action, and back in action with a win. Terry, it was some really, really good football in La Liga this weekend. Some really good games. But the extent of how bad that bit of refereeing was is extraordinary. I'm not, as you know, and the people who listen regularly know, I'm relaxed, but the referees make mistakes. You know, they miss a penalty, they make a bad decision here and there. We live with that. This was sticking their beak in where there is absolutely no cause to get involved. It's utterly bizarre that they chose to get involved, sent off one player, gave a free kick in the 6-yard box against the other guy, that then led to the match-winning goal. It's just bizarre.
Yeah, I think we have to explain.
Yeah, Justin, explain what happened. Yeah,
haven't seen that what happened, and it takes some explaining. So please bear with us.
Yes,
people listening in. Something has happened in the last minute game. It's dramatic. Mallorca 2-0 up. Las Palmas get back to 2-2.
Yeah.
Going towards the end of the game.
Can I just say, 84 minutes on the clock when it starts. Right? Yeah. So anyway, carry on.
No, and when did it
91,
result?
The goal.
7 minutes.
Yeah.
And what happened is, there's a ball in the box, so I'm trying to work out the sequence now. So it's Las Palmas must be defending a set piece or something.
Yes. It's a corner. It's a corner. Yeah, and the keeper catches a corner. And he's getting ready and throws it out, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah.
And Jaime Mata, something got on between him and Marici. And Jaime Mata turns around and I'm struggling to explain what he does.
He sort of jumps up in the air, doesn't he? And his fists are clenched, but he's nowhere near. Because what he's recognised that the keeper's playing on, and so he's actually running away, and he runs past Marici and sort of jumps and shouts something as he goes.
Yeah, and laughs. There's a laugh. He's obviously something. They're coming together at the corner, and Hami Mata's, as you say, turned to run out of the penalty box. But on his way out, he's screamed and laughed derogatory at Marici. And then Marici sticks his middle finger up.
Yeah. And that's it.
That's exactly what happened. The referee then, I'm not even sure the referee sees it, does immediately VAR get involved. That's the issue I haven't found yet, whether the referee blew the whistle because
I don't know. Yeah. Time must have passed and must have been the next break of play.
And then VAR has got involved to say that Jaime Mata has...
Well, it starts with... they start with Marici, don't they? They say he's made a derogatory gesture.
Yes.
The finger, which is casually flicked. He's nowhere near him. It's not in his face.
No.
He's running away and he just flicks a finger at him. And up like, you know, I'll do it on the screen now. It's not that rude, is it? It's not that terrible a thing. So they're going to send off Marici for that. But this is where it gets really... So that's overreach anyway. No need for that.
But this is where
it gets worse, is that they then say, oh, Mata must have provoked him.
Yes.
So therefore, restart with an indirect free kick. They're in the six-yard box, aren't they? So it has to be on the edge of the six-yard box. But you don't know that Mata's provoked him.
No.
You have no idea. He's not mic'd up. We don't know what he's done. There's no one's alleged... It's totally different. If there wasn't some kind of allegation of racism or some, you know, but there isn't.
Yeah.
No one says that. The two players aren't furiously going at each other. It's just the VAR chose to get involved. Like I say, like a primary school teacher.
Yeah. And then they have to give the free kick to Mielke.
Yeah.
Because that Jaime Mata's...
provocation.
Dirty look.
Yeah.
As... started the whole thing, so the free kick goes to Mielke.
Yeah.
And by the time the free kick is taken, and a dramatic game, that's the match winner. There's a tap of the ball, Mojica slams it into the roof of the net.
They do it really well, actually, because we rarely score from those, but they rolled it back. There was a dummy, wasn't there? The first guy overran it, and Mojica came behind him and smashed it in. Yeah, so it was good, but it's just so bizarre that they chose to get involved.
Totally. I noticed that in a few games over the weekend in La Liga and in the Premier League, where even players don't appeal for stuff, and then the game stopped.
Yeah.
And VAR gets involved and goes, "That's a penalty."
I genuinely mean the whole thing about the whole Vinny racism thing, and they dealt with it badly. And in the initial instance, there was far too much of, "Oh, but he rinds people up, though, Vinny, doesn't he?" So it very much looks as though, because they're looking for the provocation by Mata. It's like people have been one bloody course to learn about racism.
Yeah.
And so they're then looking for the provocation. And you think, no, that is no equivalence whatsoever to people in the stand doing monkey noises and stuff at Vinny.
Or
opponents and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. There's no equivalence. Between two blokes just going, oh, yeah. That's it. And no one abusing each other. No racism. No, nothing. So it's like you've gone from nothing. You've gone from, like, downplaying racism to swung entirely 360 degrees, or not 180 degrees, and now they're not even allowed to... I don't know.
And the shame of it is, John, it's made a ripple. It's come to the attention, but it's made a ripple. If this had been one of the bigger clubs, then
imagine
hell would have broken loose. If it had been around Barcelona or Atleti, because it's Las Palmas and Mallorca, it's kind of made a ripple on Saturday night. I mean, we haven't really seen much about it since, but we should be.
There
should be. This should be a good example of where VAR doesn't need to get involved.
The practice, mustn't they? Like I said, I'm not a constant knocker of referees, and they do review their practice. They must look at this and say, listen, lads, stop it. Don't this is a million miles beyond the brief.
Exactly.
It's just crazy, isn't it? Right. Like you say, it was a good game. Because what had happened is that Las Palmas had just, in the 82nd minute, they equalised at 2-2.
Yeah.
And then the goal that then follows at 91 is only 100 seconds of play, of real play later because of
between
everything.
Between the goals.
Yeah, because of everything that happened. And it obviously ends up overwhelming the reaction to the game, doesn't it? And the managers are asked about that afterwards. And they, and understandably, again, they're both a bit like, I don't really know what happened.
Exactly. It wasn't 2 hours after the game that everybody got to the bottom of it. The audio was released from VAR and the referee. And that's when everybody realised, because there was no easy explanation. The obvious one, Marici being sent off, we knew that because he'd done the middle finger.
Yeah.
But then it was sort of blurry on how Mallorca got the free kick. And then it was, well, what did exactly Mata do? So it was bizarre. And as I said, it caused a ripple Saturday night. I haven't seen too much fuss being made of it since, but there should be, just to the protocol of where VAR gets involved and where it doesn't get involved.
Yeah.
And we don't know. Nobody wants to see it get involved too much. That's no one's begging for VAR to take more action in the game. Occasionally people say, well, I'm surprised VAR hasn't looked at that. But they have. They do look at everything it's looked at. But thankfully, they don't get involved too often.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm seeing in La Liga now referees giving penalties and they just go, let them sort it out. And then wherever they say goes, counts.
I think that if it's anywhere near 50-50, let the ref have it. It's only, you know, everyone, it's there for bad mistakes, isn't it? It's not there
but
to
be
referee.
There was one yesterday. Osasuna got awarded the penalty, Albiol. In my opinion, it weren't a foul. But the referee gave it, and then I'm not even sure if VAR looked at it. We looked at it. I was at home yesterday watching it.
Yeah.
We saw loads of replays of it. I'm looking at it and thinking, well, that's not a foul. There's no tackle there. There's no foul. There's a touch on the back. There's a little bit of contact, but Albiol hasn't stuck a foot out. He hasn't kicked an opponent. He hasn't obviously shoved him. And I'm thinking that's going to be disallowed. And it wasn't.
Yeah, but I don't mind that. I think that's similar to the Premier League this season, isn't it? Where if you call for a lighter touch VAR, it means some that you don't agree with are going to get through.
Yeah.
Because the guy in the middle got it wrong in the first place. But he got it wrong in a 60-40 or 40-60.
Yeah.
And if you don't want VAR all over it, then you've got to accept that some of these ones, you're going to think, that was a bit of a soft pen, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But we live with that. We've got to live with that rather than have, you know, someone on CCTV scouring the pitch for anyone making a rude gesture at another player. It's not like it's the referee. He hasn't put his fingers up in the referee's
face.
My worry
over the penalties is the referees just give them and then let VAR sort it out.
They need to stop doing that. They need to be clear that, right, if it's soft touch, then start refereeing properly again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I get it with the linesman, the assistant referees and the flags. Keep your flag down if it's anywhere near. But also, that can skew a game, can't it? There are times at which you then end up with a period of pressure because the guy was offside.
A play give himself offside. Yeah. Kike Garcia.
Yeah, yeah.
The ball went over the top and he went to chase it and stopped.
Yeah.
Because he knew that
at his age,
referee hadn't raised the flag. And he was going to have to run from the halfway line to finish off a chance or miss a chance that he knew wasn't going to count. So he just stopped. And then the assistant referee then put the flag up and said, So it's sort of self-refereeing on that occasion. But that's my worry. The referees give penalties and go, well, I'm not sure, but I'll let VAR sort that out. And then VAR thinks, we'll back the referee, even if he's wrong.
Fair point. So that's
skews it a bit as well.
Yeah, there is a grey area. And I think you're right. I think we've seen that a few times. But I also think you need to work through that one. And
the handball one we saw another contentious handball again at the weekend with Soloth with Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
Where he heads the ball and it's close proximity, it couldn't be closer.
Yeah.
defender is marking him as tightly as he possibly can. I think Santiago Mourinho, they both jump. There's a little
and his arm is behind him, isn't his arm goes up and behind him, doesn't it?
I think they bump each other as they're both trying to head across towards the near post. And Soloth gets a slight deflection on it, and it brushes the arm of Santi Mourinho. And it
one, I understand how they're now refereeing
the laws of the game.
I see that's a penalty. I wouldn't have that as a penalty. I don't think it's reasonable to expect him. He's jumping, and it flicks his arm.
Yeah.
And
with a deflection from a player that he's next to.
Yeah.
And they're both off the ground, and they're both in the air, and they're both trying to get their balance.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying, that the laws of the game do mean that that's a penalty, but it wasn't a handball.
I would change it. But I accept that that's not what we do now. Right, should we get into the other games?
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? That's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Yes.
Celta Vigo 2, Barcelona 2. Well, this was a weird thing, wasn't it? This is like Barcelona's... Is this Barcelona's season? You know, you think, oh, they're coasting along. They're going to be fine. They're going to win the league. And this game, where it was 82, they're coasting along. When was Casado sent off? 82, yeah. So 2-0 up.
They weren't coasting.
But yeah, fair
point. The scoreline is coasting.
Yeah.
But both goals they score, you think, oh.
Yeah.
Come out of nothing.
Yeah. But they also hit the post as well, hadn't they?
Yes.
For 3-0. Yes. Potentially for 3-0. So then... I take your point. Yeah, not sort of dominating the game, but looking comfortable with the scoreline at least.
Exactly.
Until the red comes along. Yeah.
Slightly comes against the run of play, and you suddenly go, "Oh, he scored." Mm. That's Rafinha's in, scored a goal, ball over the top, great finish. That came against the not totally against the run of play, but in the context of the game, that was a surprise. It was 50-50, and Barcelona suddenly have one attack and score. Then they get second, and you're thinking, that's it. And it was similar when Lewandowski gets the second. It was similar. It was 50-50. Celta were pushing. They were trying to get the equaliser. Then suddenly Lewandowski breaks free, again through, helped by Rafinha, and 2-0. And you're thinking, that's it. But the whole time in the game, it was a poor performance from Barcelona. It was a wretched performance. It was. I did look into it, and I thought, now, I know Celta up in Vigo, the weather can be awful. The rain, the wind. It was 21 degrees. There was no wind. They weren't affected by any playing conditions. But it was just that the reason I asked that question was because Barcelona were so awful with their passing and possession play, decision making. They couldn't keep possession. They didn't try to keep possession. They were giving the ball away ridiculously frequently during that match. And when you have that scoreline of 1-0, and when the game is in the balance and you take a 1-goal lead, but the players that Barcelona have just keep possession, just tidy things up. You're not playing well and you've got your 1-goal lead. Now control the game. And then when it goes to 2-0, you're thinking, well, that's the opportunity then just to take the heat out of the game. It was just really, really untidy. In the second half, Inigo Martinez barely passed to a Barcelona teammate. I mean, he wasn't the only culprit. I said I was co-commentating on it. But it's a good idea to bring Frankie de Jong on because I'm sure Hansi Flick... You saw Hansi Flick frustrated on the bench with every time they gave the ball away. And so Frankie de Jong is sitting close to him on the bench. The instructions would be, for God's sake, go on, make sure we start keeping the ball with, you know, I can't remember where we came on, a 2-0 up or 1-0 up. Keep the ball. Let's keep, you know, tidy things up. Let's see this game out. And what does Frankie de Jong do when he comes on? Gives the ball away and keeps getting caught in possession. And it was a surprise that, oh, look, Koundé was looked surprised that someone was closing him down,
yeah,
facing him. And Frankie de Jong did exactly the same. So right throughout the game, whilst I don't support either of these two teams, I was getting irritated by Barcelona giving the ball away so cheaply, so poorly, whether it was smashing it into a teammate with no appreciation of what type of pass was needed. There was too many inaccurate passes. There was too many heavy touches. And it was just, the example is Jules Koundé.
So talk us through. So it's 2-0. They just had Casado sent off. And it's like a minute later, or sudden, and it's just like, and a guy, as I said, 2 weeks ago, I said to you, isn't he playing really well? And you agreed.
Yeah. And then things were against Real Sociedad.
Mm.
And then even worse at the weekend. There was an issue at left back with Barcelona as well. That was a big problem in the first half. So when Barcelona scored, the reason I'm suggesting it was against the run of play was because they were having a terrible time with the left back spot, Gerard Martin. He was being targeted. He got booked early. He didn't look up to the level, and Celta knew that, and they were attacking down that right flank, and then all of a sudden Barcelona score. Then he should have got sent off for a second yellow with a challenge on Iago Aspas. There was a possible penalty that he nearly gave away as well. So they've got the one goal lead with all these problems in an area of their pitch. But Dani Olmo was playing wide left in the midfield, and he was too deep. Nico Martinez, his confidence was edgy because he was having to try and cover Gerard Martin, who was playing at left back instead of Baldo, who had some muscle issues that they wanted to be careful of. So it threw Barcelona out in second. Late as the game progressed, Dani Olmo went more into midfield, into more central position, closer to Lewandowski. Hector Fort came on, who's an 18-year-old right back, and I've seen him play left back more than he does right back, and he completely made a difference. So I hate to say it, but I can't imagine we're going to see Gerard Martin had to be substituted at halftime for a number of reasons. They were having problems, but the biggest one clearly was he probably should have been sent off. So that didn't help. So that's an issue long term for Barcelona, that if Balde's not fit, they've got a problem in the left back spot. But this was a game that we should be talking about, that they...
Yeah, so the goal, they
weren't good,
they?
But they won.
Yeah.
But they totally threw this away.
Talk us through the Koundé.
It's complacency. It's sloppy, untidy play. It's a long, hopeful kind of diagonal pass over the top. Not Barcelona's usual high defensive line, but high enough that Koundé gets a head start. I think it's Alfonso González who's chasing it, who scores the goal. It's a hopeful chase in the hope that you might put a player off, but Koundé's got 5-6 yards ahead of him, but jogs towards the ball, has a glance one way and over his shoulder, the wrong way. So he glances over his right shoulder to see if anyone's chasing him, and Alfonso González is on his left shoulder. And then there's a slight degree of panic and sloppy play where the back pass is under hit. And it leads to González running through, finishing off the chance. It was González to finish off the chance and beat Iñaki Peña. Awful play.
Yeah.
And then at 2-0, we often joke that it's a dodgy lead, 2-0. Everybody loves a 2-0 lead. Come on.
Yeah.
And when you're 10 minutes up and you're Barcelona and you're leading 2-0, but they should know, Koundé should know, that we just had a player sent off. You give them, Celta kind of lost belief at that point. I didn't think they showed enough belief. And every 20 minutes to go, and it was Lewandowski scored in the 60th minute on the sort of 70-minute mark, I'm looking and thinking, they've lost belief. They don't think they can get back in this game. And there's still 20 minutes to go, and there's still one goal changes the game. And it did look like it was going to come. But Koundé gives them an invitation back into the match. And it was kind of inevitable after that they would score another goal. Barcelona all the place, all over the place then, hanging on for dear life. Actually, Celta could have won it. When it goes to 2-2, there was other chances and Celta were on the attack. There was only one team going to win it, but Barcelona held on for 1 point when it clearly should have been 3 points to Barcelona. And you can't afford those slip-ups.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because Real Madrid are breathing down their necks, aren't they? 4 points behind, game in hand.
And it gives Atleti back into it as well.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't write Atletico off. We shouldn't write Vieira off. We shouldn't write, you know, one or two other teams off. It's from a real dominant position in the league table. The defeat and poor performance against Real Sociedad, to then the international break and then going into this game, which is a tricky game. Celta are good at home in particular. They can attack. They can score goals. They do carry a threat. It's one of those where we're looking at before the game and thinking, there is the potential here for at least a draw from Celta. They will score goals. For Barcelona to have a commanding 2-0 lead and then to throw it away it should be a huge blow to Barcelona.
Yeah, interesting test, isn't it, for Hansi Flick? Very much so. So, Leganés 0, Real Madrid 3, kind of scoreline that you're sort of expecting come the start of the season. Now, obviously, they've had their sort of their problems developing the cohesion that we haven't really seen from them, but it's a good scoreline, isn't it? Mbappe scored, yes. Valverde with a free kick. Dodgy wall, surely, for the free kick. And then Bellingham.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. My initial response was, oh, Dimitrovic could do better there.
Yeah.
But then you see the and also I thought, but how's it got through?
Yeah.
And then you see the wall splits and jumps and it goes through the wall. And I don't blame Dimitrovic whatsoever.
Other than he set up the wall. And I know the individual, there's only three of them in the wall, isn't it? And I don't quite know what their plan was and what they were doing, but basically nothing.
Let him it was one to the side, but that meant there was a gap there anyway. It was a poorly set up wall. So, yeah, I'll take your point that Dimitrovic should be more demanding there in terms of what he's expecting from his teammates. But Real Madrid, Leganés didn't have a shot on target. So the concern is Real Madrid defensively. And Leganés, they're not a bad team at home. They're struggling. They're one of a few teams in La Liga that are struggling to score goals on a regular basis. So that doesn't help them. But they're at home. I think they've scored six, conceded four. Their home record was quite good. I wouldn't have predicted a 3-0 win, if I'm being honest, for Real Madrid. I probably would have predicted a closer scoreline, bearing in mind the problems that the Real Madrid have going into the game. But their best form of defence is going to be attack. And it was a little bit of a surprising lineup, to be honest. Ferland Mendy left out. I don't know whether that's because he's going to play against Liverpool, but Fran Garcia got the left back. Valverde, as expected, played right back. I expected Brahim Diaz to start because he was superb the week in the game prior when he came on, and he's been playing really well and he's just come back from injury. So I was slightly surprised to see Arda Güler get an opportunity, and he was brilliant. So if you're Liverpool, you're looking at it and thinking, oh, that's Andy. There's no Carvajal, there's no Alaba, there's no Militao, there's no Lucas Vasquez. They're playing a young 21-year-old at centre-back. Courtois back in goal, so that's a big plus. We don't know who left-back is. Ancelotti's not sure who's going to be his best left-back. But Real Madrid have still got fantastic attacking players. Mm-hmm. And in this game, Vinicius and Mbappe and Bellingham and Güler, Dani Ceballos played well in midfield alongside Camavinga. Still got talent going forward. It's going to be problematic for the rest of the season unless they strengthen in January defensively. But they've still got an abundance of quality in midfield. So I think that an attack. So I think Ancelotti and Real Madrid, that it's going to be business as usual. We've got Mbappe, we've got Vinicius, we've got Bellingham, Brahim Diaz, Arda Güler, one or two others, Rodrigo when he's back fit. You know, that it's Ancelotti's. He's not going to make a drama out of it. He should. Yeah. I would. Most managers would. But Ancelotti doesn't. That's not his personality.
Yeah. Part of him surviving at these big clubs, isn't it? That he doesn't create a drama, which in the long run has worked out quite well for him.
Put him in a corner and he would probably say, I could do him a couple of players. He probably, that is probably what he's saying. You know, I clearly I'd rather have Fede Valverde available to play midfield.
Yeah.
That's an obvious one. And you know, maybe I could do with another centre back as well. Vasquez isn't going to be out for a long time,
but he's not the answer.
That comes back, but he's not a right back.
Yeah.
So there are. I probably still suggest that Fede Valverde is a better right back than Lucas Vasquez, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But you're going to miss Valverde in midfield. So there are better right backs around than Lucas Vasquez, and they do need another centre back. I mean, Alaba, they're talking February now. Militao's not going to play again this season. You're now looking at Raul Asensio or Tchouaméni. Now, what happens if Rüdiger picked up an injury? Then it totally derails your season. If it isn't derailed already, in terms of your preparation going into the new season, we've got this squad, we've got that player, we've got cover here, we've got cover there, then suddenly that you've got to look at it in January, and Real Madrid have to bring in a centre back and a right back.
Yeah, multiple. They're already short before the latest injuries.
If I was Liverpool, I'd be looking at this and thinking, but we've still got to be careful at the other end.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they've still got, they may have these players missing defensively, but if we're not on top of our game, they're going to cause us problems. So,
yeah. It'll be interesting, but slots Liverpool against a team that will give them a bit of chaos with attacking, which they haven't really had yet. It's all been very controlled. For Liverpool this season, and effective, of course.
And I'm sure Liverpool are aware of that. You'd be rather be playing Real Madrid with a 21-year-old centre back and Valverde at right back, and that means Valverde's not midfield. You'd be happy with that if you're Liverpool. But at the same time, I'm sure they're aware that if they're not switched on at the back, then it may be 3-4 to Real Madrid.
Mm.
Both teams might concede goals, and if it goes end to end and it's an open match, which I expect it to be, then it could be anyone's. A couple of weeks ago, I was looking at this and thinking Liverpool are flying and Real Madrid have got all these injuries, blah, blah, blah. Then I see the games at the...
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Weekend, Liverpool did okay just to overcome a team that
that kept giving them goals. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, don't even start me on that first one that Southampton concede. Real Madrid won't do that. And yeah, but now I'm looking at, as the game's getting closer, I'm thinking, but do you know what? The Real Madrid, it's a real shame that these players are injured at the back, but still good.
Yeah. Right, let's move on. Atleti, fifth straight win, Terry, for, you know, we're having... This is the pattern with Simeone over these 700 games, isn't it? Or certainly the second half of the Simeone era, is that there are times that you're sort of thinking you're losing a bit of faith and stuff, but you sort of think, yeah. And it was such an unconvincing performance for much of the game against Alaves, but there they are, five straight wins, and they're in it. They're still there.
They're keeping clean sheets. They conceded in this one, but it was a penalty. It was a silly penalty from Javi Galán. Yeah. Raises his arm completely and on a harmless-looking cross going in towards the box, where there was only one player in there that was possibly going to head the ball. So that was a ridiculous penalty for him to give away. That was in the 6th minute. Guridi tucked it away. Alaves had two touches in the first half in the penalty box, and one of them was the penalty. And yet Atleti, they were not superior in any way whatsoever in this match. And then until they get an equaliser through a penalty, which was contentious, the one we were talking about earlier, they didn't do like scoring. And Simeone was making the changes. The one big change that made a difference in the game was the entrance of his son.
Mm.
His son is bringing something. And I'm glad because people can say it's nepotism bringing in you. But I think most football coaches and managers that do have a son involved at their club treat them harder than make it more difficult for them than any other player at the club. And we saw him go to Alaves on loan last year. He just a little bit of context, terrible broken ankle pre-season. Dreadful challenge. One of those which you don't want to see again on the screen because the ankle is not where it should be and the foot is pointing in a different direction. He came back unexpectedly, quite early as well, which suggests, it tells you a little bit about his personality and character that he got back quicker than he should have done. I didn't expect to see him play that season. I haven't seen the injury and seen the incident. And he made a really good impression to the extent I thought, well, they should keep him again. Now, 50-50, do you let him go out on loan again to Alaves? Because he only played about 10, 15 games towards the end of the season. But I thought he was good enough to keep at Atleti. And that's what's happened. He's now made his international debut as well. And he's terrific. I mean, he's powerful, he's quick. All the stuff you'd imagine that a Simeone son would have, he's got. But he can play as well. And he just livens things up. And he made a big difference in this game. Until he came on, it wasn't really happening. Simeone was chopping and changing, trying to make things happen. I didn't see them scoring until they get the equaliser from the penalty. And then Soloth, who came off the bench, scores a wonderful goal. So big squad, rotations after the international break, team picked on where you'd travelled to play for your country and stuff like that. But it was uninspiring. Yeah. And I'm looking at Alaves and I'm thinking, I think they've lost 6 out of 7. So it's 7 out of 8 away from home this season. I think they've lost something, the 1 win in 6 in the league. Yeah, it is 1 win in 6 in the league. They beat Mallorca. And Atleti made so hard work of it. And I heard Luis Garcia Plaza talking about the game before the match. It was defeatist. This is in our league. We've got, you know, he rattled off other teams that they're in a league with. Leganes, Rayo, those type of teams. This isn't our league, but we're playing, and he talked Atleti up, he talked his team down. I thought, well, they've got no chance. If their manager's writing this game off, they've got no chance. So they've been uninspiring, and yet they go into this game without really having too much attacking play. We're able to nullify Atletico Madrid, and Atletico were not fortunate. They deserved the win because they had more possession and stuff like that, but it was an uninspiring win. And there'll be a game in the minute that we talk about that when a superior team plays an inferior team, how you approach it at the start of the match is so important. And Atleti just don't do that. They don't blow teams away. Very rarely do we see Atleti play against a team like Alaves, who are struggling for goals, struggling for points, got no confidence whatsoever. Atleti have got a team full of international players and you don't see any difference for an hour.
Right. It's, yeah.
Bonkers.
You've done the foreshadowing, Terry. You might as well tell us.
It was the game afterwards.
Yeah.
Girona against Espanyol.
Yeah.
And so you've seen Girona 1-2 on the trot. They're back in form. Players coming back from injury. Some of the new players that arrived at the club are now making an impact. And you're thinking, oh yeah, they can replace Dobbik and they can replace, you know, Savio and one or two others, Alex Garcia. These new players that come in, we wrote them off and said, oh, they're not going to be as good as last season. Going into the game, I'm looking at the stats. They've got the third highest in terms of possession, the third highest in terms of passing. So they're playing exactly the same as they did last season. And all of a sudden, these new players are clicking. Miofsky, Brian Hill, Asprilla in midfield. They can be the new Dobbik and Savio and Alex Garcia. And 26 minutes, 4-0. It was a superior team, playing an inferior team, playing at full pelt, at top speed, with and without the ball, showing their quality, and they just blew Espanyol away. That was it, game over. They took the foot off the gas. They've got a Champions League game coming up. But we never see that from Atleti, where they start fast and furious. And I'm talking about Luis Garcia Plaza saying, we're talking Atleti up, talking his team down, trying to manage the expectation levels of the Alaves fans, saying, don't expect us to get anything from this game. So they went there expecting to be on the back foot and to be pummeled in the first 20, 25 minutes. And then Atleti don't do that. But Girona did. And Miofsky and Brian Hill, the combination between those two was off the scale, making goals for each other, scoring goals. They were superb to the extent that the rumours, I'm not sure, as we do the podcast, whether Manolo Gonzalez has still got his job at 4-0 at 26 minutes. And then Girona declared it looked obvious that the manager was going to have to be replaced before the next game. So Espanyol kind of got away with it. Javi Puado scores a really good goal to make it 4-1. But by that time, Girona and Donny van de Beek's another player. He's now looking and he's thinking, well, yeah, there must have been a player there at Ajax and that Man United never saw through injury and lack of trust from the coach and staff at United, whoever has been manager. And it's the same as Brian Hill. I'm watching this game and thinking, Spurs should have kept him. Oh, Spurs are 4-0 up at Man City. I was going to do put something on X to say, because I've been supporting Brian Hill's when he first came to Spurs. People saying, what's he like? Really good. You really enjoy watching him play. When he plays, it doesn't happen. He doesn't get the trust of the managers. He plays in cup matches and stuff like that. He's been loaned to Sevilla and now he's gone on loan to Girona. So it's amazing how when he comes back to La Liga, how he can look so different to the player that we see in the Premier League. And it purely has to be down to the fact that I don't see any great differences in physicality in La Liga and the Premier League. The pace of the game, slightly different. But I do see him getting knocked off the ball in the Premier League. I don't see him getting knocked off the ball in La Liga. And my only thought is that it must be down to the managers that play him and trust him. And he feels trusted. And he feels as if he's one of the more, you know, trusted players. The manager believes in me. He's playing well. He's getting opportunities for Spain and playing well for them as well. So it is one of those anomalies where you're looking at a player that can be so good in one league and not so good in the other. Because he plays for Spurs, he gets knocked off the ball and I think people are right. You know, is he strong enough? He just looks a stronger, sharper, better player playing with a manager that has confidence in him. He was brilliant at the weekend. Absolutely brilliant. Won the performances of the weekend as an individual. And, you know, he's Girona are excellent. Espanyol are poor.
Right. Right, where should we go next? Let's do Valencia, shall we? Yeah. So obviously they haven't been in action, had they, because of the floods?
27 days.
Yeah. And they were playing Betis, which is a potentially tough game, hugely emotional beforehand, yes. Isn't it? A lot of acknowledgement of what happened and the people who've been killed.
Brings it home, John, how... I mean, we're slightly detached from it. We read about it, we've seen it, but the coverage has pretty much stopped. But when you see it and you're out in Spain, it does bring it home.
Oh, we've literally got it in Wales now, haven't we, with floods again. It's, you know, it's a bit...
But the tragedy of over 200 people dead, still loads, a lot, numbers missing.
Yeah.
And it was handled beautifully, I have to say. And credit to Betis as well. I mean, before we talk about the game itself, it was difficult for the Valencia players. It was difficult for the Betis players. It was difficult for Betis turning up there and the supporters and being part of it. A team that's bottom of the league that hasn't played for 27 days. We saw two of the players in particular were really struggling. Hugo Duro and Cesar Tarraga were really, they were sobbing, you know, during the stuff that was going on before the game. It was incredibly moving. It was beautiful the way it was managed, the way it was handled. And I did think this is going to be a weird game of football. And it started off almost in silence for the first few minutes. Players not sure how to approach it. The crowd not sure how you can be, you know, displaying great levels of emotion and sadness and condolences. And then within a minute, you're up and at them and playing football and people cheering in the ground. And it was difficult until Cesar Tarraga, the big centre-back, 22-year-old from the region, scores the opening goal in the 7th minute. Then the game kind of really sort of clicked into play because for 6 or 7 minutes, it was almost being played in silence. Which is understandable. And then Betis get the equaliser in the 13th minute with an own goal from Hugo Duro. And the first thing they do, they don't celebrate. They go and get a big flag with a Valencia flag with the black ribbon on it and hold it up. And the Valencia fans are then applauding and clapping a team that's just scored against them. So it had that kind of weird emotion to it, which is totally understandable. But then in the second half, Valencia just blew them away.
From really good, well-taken goals is crucial to it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Hugo Duro's first one, such a difficult skill. High ball coming over your shoulder, and he got really good contact with the volley. Then 2 or 3 minutes later, he's through bearing down one-on-one, and he dinks it over the goalkeeper. I'm convinced he wouldn't have scored the second if he hadn't scored the first, because he's lacking confidence. But that first goal gave him wings. The occasion, then, it was an onslaught. And then Diego Lopez gets another wonderful goal. So was it 3 goals in 5 or 6 minutes?
Yeah.
To take the game away from Betis. And then from then on, Betis were struggling. Jimmy Avila gets one back. But there was huge periods in this game. And going into this weekend's action, and I'm looking at the league table, looking at the games, that 2 games in hand for Valencia, but one of them is against Real Madrid. And you're looking at their position in the table and the points they've got, the goals they've scored or the goals they haven't scored this season, the goals they conceded. It didn't look promising. But there was huge parts of this game where I'm looking and thinking, this is a team, this literally is a team, not a club, because it's a different club now. This is a team that should be challenging for Europe, let alone bottom of the league. Barely, and won one game this season. They were sensational. So the occasion, it was observed and managed beautifully before the game. And then Valencia came up with some beautiful football as well, which is good to see. We had these young, bright players that we thought so highly of. You're concerned there's too many of them, but they really rose to the challenge at the weekend. And on the evidence of that match, you couldn't possibly see them get relegated, but it's only taken them to 10 points. They're 18th, and some good fixtures coming up. Teams that next 5 or 6 games, I think, are against teams in and around them. So it's going to be make or break now for Valencia on the football field.
Osasuna 2, Villarreal 2, two teams, Champions League contenders, I suppose. They're not really title contenders, are they? And a 93rd minute equaliser. For Villarreal, from a penalty for Gerard Moreno, who reappeared. I think he came on at half time, didn't he? If I remember rightly. So yeah, but we also have to give a bit of credit.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the Osasuna underrated, Ante Budimir, Terry, an underrated player. Outside of people who watch La Liga regularly, people wouldn't have heard of Budimir.
He had 7 touches in the first half. One was kickoff, one was a penalty, and he got 2 goals. So my concern with Osasuna, and it's not concern, it's the reason Osasuna are doing so well is that Budimir is incredibly efficient.
Yeah.
I think every shot this season, every chance has gone in. He scored, he's taken. That can't continue. I hope it does for Osasuna's sake and Budimir's sake. And I agree with you totally, John. He's so underrated. And he's been good at all the teams he's played at Mallorca, and now he's a regular contender to be one of the top scorers in the league playing for Osasuna. So it's 2-0 up at half time, contentious penalty, I think, in my opinion. Marcelino was on the verge of getting sent off. That's another issue. I mean, his manager's getting booked. But Simeone in that game, 700th game, they sort of scores a worldie. Simeone runs down the touchline, gets involved with a celebration with his team, yellow card. And the referee had a look of glee on his face, as if to say, I've got you, because he'd come out of his technical area. Do we want to see that type of thing? We keep seeing managers and coaches, they're getting booked left, right and centre. Marcelino got booked. I thought he was going to clear. He was going to get sent off because he was furious with the way the referee was handling the game in the first half. Makes the change at halftime, and I wouldn't say Villarreal got back into the game because it had been quite even, but it was a 2-0 scoreline. So full credit to them, Alex Baena with the first, Gerard Moreno with the penalty towards the end. That's 50-50 as well. And Marcelino ends up being a lot happier than he was at half time. So it was that's a decent point for Vera. Osasuna at home, tough place to go.
So the Basque Derby is a big occasion, but we're getting to it 7th, 8th in the list, unfortunately. I mean, a good win for Athletic Club, but it wasn't a classic.
I knew it was going to be 1-0.
Yeah.
I didn't know to who.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's extraordinary, this match, because we've gone into this game. If you look at the context and the contrast between the two teams, you'd think that Real Sociedad have been struggling this year. If they won this match, they would have gone above Athletic Club. We had a podcast with the patrons recently. I said the Athletic are underachieving because of the quality that they have. They had one game against Espanyol this year where it was as good as any team performance I've seen this year. Attacking play was off the scale. The Williams brothers were at it. Berenguer was brilliant. Garizetta was good. Santet was good. Whoever played, whoever came on, they were fabulous that day. And we haven't seen that enough. And even in this game, the attacking prowess of both teams does need work on. Alvaro Giallo got the nod ahead of Garizetta, which I'm slightly bemused at because there seems to be a four up front now that's obvious that should be their first choice. So Sanset playing off of Garizetta and the Williams brothers. That seems a tough on Berenguer, but he's a great asset to come on and play from the bench and whatever. But Valverde went with Diallo up front and it did work. Athletic were better in the second half, kind of protect their lead a bit, and Real Sociedad don't have the potency to get an equaliser, which is pretty much sums them up this season. Still baffled as to why Mossadi doesn't get. You start chucking the ball in the box with 20 minutes to go. What have you got to lose?
Yeah.
It doesn't come on. They have quality up front. No one's got any confidence. Ori Oskarsson was injured. So even more reason why you're not giving Sadiq 20 minutes at the end when you're 1-0 down in the best derby and you start slinging the ball in the box. Even surprised with Taki Kuba came off. But then you put Geraldo Becker on, who doesn't deserve to be on the bench either. He should be playing. So I knew it was going to be 1-0. I probably would have assumed it would be Athletic Club, but I didn't expect a high-scoring Basque derby.
Yeah. Getafe, did you expect Getafe to score a goal?
I couldn't believe that. I didn't know that stat.
No, I didn't. I heard the commentators say it. And I
scored 8.
Yeah.
All from set pieces and penalties. And then a triumph for Bordalas, I have to be honest. By David Pezzolano, they came for a draw, probably thinking Getafe don't score. I expect more from Valladolid, to be honest, in terms of attacking play and possession. Getafe, Bordalas, when I say it's a triumph for Bordalas, he makes a couple of changes that were really, really significant. He puts on Alvaro Rodriguez a few minutes before the goal, and he scores a really good goal. But the other important move he made was he brought Iglesias on at right back and pushed Alan Neum further forward into a more attacking position. And his athleticism, his enthusiasm, his power led him to making the first goal for Alvaro Rodriguez, and then he gets the second himself. So it was credit to Bordalas in that one. It was
just first half reinvented. Was
hard work. Yeah, first half was hard work. Second half, Getafe up the tempo and deserved the win. And it was, full credit to Jose Bordalas.
Yes.
We said he only won 6 players, new players in January. He said it before the game, and I thought, I'm not sure that's the right thing to say because those you're not singling anybody out.
Out you go, lads. Yeah.
All of them are useless.
Yeah. And
6 new players in January, which isn't the case, to be honest.
Right, one more game to go. Wasn't the greatest. Sevilla 1, Rayo Vallecano 0. Unai Lopez was sent off.
Another
eating his vegetables.
Yeah, but should that be a sending off? I don't think so. My opinion, though, if that's one of the other instances of VAR getting involved, because is it Romero smacks him on the back, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Initially.
And he sort of slaps him, doesn't he?
And then Nuno Lopez turns and reacts instinctively with a... Well, he didn't hit him in the face, did he?
Does he not catch him? I thought it was like an open palm, maybe caught him on the face, on the side of the face.
I didn't think it caught him on the face. I thought it was like a shoulder slap.
I don't think it's a scandal. I think there's enough there. And obviously, if you're looking at an incident of violent conduct, it is a matter for the VAR. It's not like the other one that we were discussing earlier. That's just inexplicable. You could have some sympathy for him because it was a bit of a... You know, if the refs had seen it, he might have said, "Oh, behave yourself." So, yeah.
So that was a big turning point. Although Gibraltar had given Sevilla the lead, Romero did have a chance or two. Sevilla making hard work of it. But you know what? 18 points, 12th position. They're higher in the league than they should be, to be honest. Sal was back on the bench. So that's a bonus. That's a help. I keep saying I'm not convinced Sevilla are not going to be in the relegation battle, but somehow they just keep edging games and getting a win here and there that keeps them well ahead of trouble at the bottom.
Right. We'll stop there. Enjoy your European football this week, everybody. Sorry for all the coughing and the spluttering that's been going on. And we will see you for another podcast soon. Hope you're all feeling well, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.